Greetings and welcome to this edition of TW Now. This edition is pre-recorded, and so if you try to go ahead and comment or ask questions, unfortunately we won't be able to get to you today. We will be addressing a few questions if we get the time of typically ask questions about the topic that we're addressing today, but we'll be back live here with the following week. We do want to welcome our guests, first of all, and before I do, we have a special occasion, because as we film this TW Now, we have now been in production for 1 year. So this is our 1 year anniversary of producing these short programs, and so it's a little bit special for us today. Mm-hmm. As we begin, I do want to welcome our guests. Our two guests are familiar faces on our program. First of all, Mr. Gerald Weston, who is the author of the booklet that we produce, the Living Church of God produces, Easter, the Untold Story. So thank you for being with us today, Mr. Weston.
Thank you.
And also Mr. Dexter Wayfield, again, a familiar face on our program. And he's written an article titled, Are You a Quartadeciman? And so we welcome him again. I should say this article is in our Tomorrow's World publications. So if you'd like to look for either one of these booklets, these literature elements, please go ahead and look on the Tomorrow's World website, both Easter, the Untold Story by Mr. Gerald Weston, and also the article, Are You a Quartadeciman?, which we'll ask him to define for us here today. And that's from Mr. Dexter Wakefield. So welcome on the program.
March, April 2013, if they want to find it.
Okay, March, April 2013 for the article. Okay, let's go ahead and get started with the discussion today. We want to begin by asking this question. Why is it that most churchgoers believe that Easter is one of the two most important days in the Christian calendar, along with Christmas? And what's the connection between Passover and Easter? Why is it the average churchgoer keeps Easter when we read the Bible, we see a lot of references to Passover? So why the disparity, why the difference, and how do we get to this point? So let's begin, Mr. Weston, perhaps you could be our first first victim in answering questions today. Put the spotlight on you. Why do you think that most people keep Easter?
I would go back to a story in my booklet on Easter, the Untold Story. I began fairly early there telling the story about my atheist Uncle George, a very colorful character to say the least, rather crass and crude in a lot of ways. But he told me one time how he became an atheist, and it all began when he was 5 years of age. And that was the time when his mother, which is my grandmother, told him to go out and look for the eggs that the rabbits had laid. And she raised rabbits, and he knew that they didn't lay eggs. And he said, well, Mother, you know that rabbits don't lay eggs. And she said, well, Georgie, that's what she called him, go out and look for the eggs, and if you look real hard, you'll find them. And he said he really did look, but she must have hidden him too well. And he came back in, and she had her back to him. She was at the sink or the window. He couldn't remember exactly. And he took her by the legs and turned her around and looked up at her and said, Mother, you lied to me. Rabbits don't lay eggs. And he said, that is when I began to question religion. And it's interesting because many years later, I came along and I found out that I'd been lied to about the very same things, Easter, Christmas, a lot of other things. But I was learning the truth at the time, and so I went in a very different direction. So it is very important, and tradition, following tradition is not the best way to go.
Mr. Wakefield, what do you think? What's your experience?
You know, the histories of this is really important. If you want to find out what happened, you have to go back and look how it happened. The first century church, the initial church, were taught by the apostles, we know that as a matter of history, to keep the Christian Passover. We'll maybe go into that here in a little while. But then, after a great controversy in the first and second century called the Quartadeciman controversy, I mean the 14th controversy, over whether to keep it on the 14th of the first month, or Easter, which was then becoming the dominant idea in Orthodox Christianity, or what became Orthodox Christianity, that the first century church most definitely did keep Passover on the 14th.
So let me ask you this, either one of you gentlemen. What we're saying is that the Passover actually came from the Bible, was kept by Christians of the first century, as opposed to Easter. Where did Easter come from then? Why would we even be talking about Easter?
Well, I think it's important to even recognize, as we're talking about the Quarto Decimum controversy, why would there be a Quarto Decimum controversy? And it is interesting, when you look at the New Testament, something that many church-going Christians are not aware of is that Christ was crucified on the day of the Passover. And when you think about that, why was that, what was the association between that? And you look at the Old Testament, the original Passover, that's when the death angel passed over the children of Israel, and those that had the blood of a lamb on the, over the door and on the two side posts was protected from the death angel, and those that didn't have the blood died. And so Christ shed his blood so that the death angel, you might say, would pass over us.
So the symbolism from the Old Testament still applies in the New Testament, is what you're saying. Well, now, what verses the symbolism from Easter? Where does how does that apply? I mean, doesn't that apply to Christians?
Well, Christ said at what was the Last Supper, Christ, how I have longed to keep this Passover with you. He very much wanted to do that. And the New Testament goes on to say, Christ, our Passover was sacrificed for us. So we know that Christ, when he died, and then the following day, of course, was the High Holy Day, they had to get him into his grave. But the importance of Christ as our Passover is prefigured by the first Passover. That's why it was there. It was a shadow of things to come, which is a fulfillment by what Christ did. Later on, the Orthodox Christianity simply moved away from it, and they already had their own festivals at those times, and they put a Christian veneer on the festivals that they already had, and it was much easier for the pagans to then adopt those things. That's a matter of history, and really not that controversial.
So are there any other references to the New Testament? Let's say I know nothing about the Bible whatsoever, and I want, say, show me, where do we read in the New Testament about the Passover? We mentioned Christ dying on the Passover, being crucified on the Passover. Are there any other of the early church leaders that kept the Passover? Did the apostles keep the Passover? Where would we go to learn about that?
Well, there was quite a controversy that erupted, which is the Quarto Decimum controversy, and that was whether to keep this pagan festival, which was Easter. And it's interesting, I don't want to get away from that aspect of your earlier question there. Where does it come from? When we look at the very term Easter, it comes from Eostre, from Ishtar, from Astarte, all different names for the same pagan goddess of fertility. And so then you bring in rabbits, you bring in eggs, you bring in the lily, all symbols of fertility that came from a pre-Christian past. And so that was, as Mr. Wakefield was saying, was really, they put a Christian veneer on it. And if you're a churchgoer, you ought to ask the question, why are we keeping a festival with the name of a pagan goddess with all the symbols of fertility that went along with that pagan goddess? That's something that people ought to know. Whereas the Bible shows the Passover, Christ kept the Passover and the days of unleavened bread with his parents growing up when he was 12 years old and went down to Jerusalem. We know of at least three, if not four, Passovers in his lifetime. And then again, he said, I want to keep this Passover with you before I suffer, before he died on the evening before his crucifixion.
Couple questions before we get too far then into the history. A couple questions. First, just from a personal basis, why don't you think people ask the question? I mean, why do so many people go through the motions of hunting for Easter eggs when it comes to Easter Sunday? Why do people do it? What do you think? I'm just mean from a, I don't know, a psychological perspective, or why do people do something if it doesn't make any sense? What do you think?
Well, I'm sure that hunting for Easter eggs and so forth, these things have their appeal, and they were done for centuries, long before they got Christian names on them. And I think they have a certain appeal to people. But the Christian church of the first century was very different in what they said. You mentioned, where do we find all of these things in the Bible? If I could take a moment just to read something. This is from the article that we referenced earlier. In 1 Corinthians 11, 23 through 26, the Apostle Paul gave the church in Corinth, a Gentile church, these are Gentiles in Corinth, Greece, instructions on how to keep the Christian Passover, the quarter-decimine Passover.
Now, if I can just interject just real quickly here. When we say the Passover, what do we mean? Just the ceremony itself. Before we go on, look at the history, what do we do? What do people do for the Passover? So understand.
Okay. Well, if you look at the example in the scriptures, Jesus kept the Passover with his disciples before he died on that evening. What people call the Lord's Supper, the Eucharist, various other terms, that was actually the Passover that Christ was keeping. And Matthew, Mark, and Luke all make it very clear, at least 12 times it calls it the Passover. Now, we know that the Jews were also keeping the next night, and they call it Passover, but the Passover is on the 14th, and Christ kept it at the right time. So the bread and the wine that he substituted for the lamb and the bitter herbs and so forth is what we call the Passover, the Christian Passover.
So that ceremony of taking the bread and the wine. Just for clarification purposes for our audience, mm-hmm. Is that something that should be done every day, like some denominations do, or once a year on that day? Or how would you explain that?
The Passover can only be taken on the Passover. If you take the bread and the wine on any other day, it's not a Passover. You're having a snack. It's not the Passover. It has to be done at that particular time and in the manner that Christ instructed and in the manner that the Apostle Paul instructed the first century church to do it, as we know as a matter of history. The idea that you can take pagan practices and put a Christian veneer on them is called sanctifying the pagan. That is an idea of mainstream Christianity that originates in the Catholic Church, and that you can take a completely pagan thing and put a Christian name, a Christian veneer on it, and then it's much easier for people of other cultures to come in and graft into this. It's called sanctifying the pagan. But biblically, we are instructed, commanded, never to do that.
Okay, so then let's continue with the story of how the change happened. We talked about the apostles and Christ keeping the Passover, even being crucified on the Passover. And you were about to mention, I think, what Paul told the church at Corinth before I interrupted you here. Maybe if you want to pick up the story with Paul.
Okay. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and beginning in verse 23, the Apostle Paul gave the when, the what, and the why of taking the Christian Passover. And you have to remember that when Christ did it, it was on the 14th. That was the day, the holy day followed. That's always the 15th of the first lunar month of the Jewish or the Hebrew calendar. And Paul said, "For I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you." So he is saying, this is what Christ told me, revealed to me, to tell you to do. That the Lord Jesus, and this is when we are to do it, on the same night in which he was betrayed, that's the night of the Last Supper, that's the 14th, and then he gives what we are to do, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Then he says, why? Do this in remembrance of me. We're to keep a memorial to his death, mm-hmm. not to his resurrection. That is what mm-hmm. he commanded them to do. He's quoting what Jesus said at the Last Supper. And then he is also gives this instruction to a Gentile church. This is a New Testament instruction to a Gentile church on keeping what the Catholics branded as the quarter-decimine or the 14th or Passover.
Maybe, again, if we can just take a sidestep here, when we talk about then the 14th day of the first month, what does that mean in terms of us today, because how can we know when that is? We keep a different, we don't have the Hebrew calendar, we keep a different calendar. So how do we even know what we're talking about here?
Well, the Jews have preserved the calendar that was given to them originally by God through Moses, and they've kept that down through the centuries, and you can go to the Encyclopedia Britannica 11th edition, and it carries it right through to the end of this century when these events are. I think it's very important that we know that it is the 14th, because without that understanding, it confuses people in terms of the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Christ. As Mr. Wakefield has already alluded to here already, the 14th was the Passover, but the 15th was the beginning of the Days of Unleavened Bread, and that 15th was a high day. It was an annual Sabbath day. And so when people think of Christ being crucified on the preparation for the Sabbath, they often think of the weekly Sabbath instead of the annual Sabbath day that was its preparation for that day. And without knowing that, it's all confused in terms of when Christ was crucified and when he was resurrected. And it denies the very sign that Jesus gave in Matthew, the 12th chapter, verses 38 through 40, that he would be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. And that's confirmed by the fact that he was speaking of Jonah, and the Hebrew in Jonah says 3 days and 3 nights, and it means exactly that. And you can't get that between Friday and Sunday morning.
So then the church at the time of the apostles kept the Passover. Paul taught the Passover. What happened after that? What happened after Paul died? What's the story from there?
Well, that picks up in history with what's called the Quaterdecimian controversy in the second century. Paul's, rather, the disciple of John, Polycarp, had this huge dispute with Victor of Rome, who was the bishop of Rome at that time.
Or Anicetus. So Victor or Anicetus? I think it was Anicetus.
Okay.
Don't mean to contradict you there.
That's
either
okay.
way.
Okay, you get it right. Over what day they should do. And they agreed to disagree. But later on in the second century, the whole thing erupted again. And the Pope in Rome in those days literally excommunicated all of the churches in Asia Minor over this.
Mm-hmm. Over keeping the 14th Passover.
That's right. It was called heretical and anathema.
And what did they do? So the churches in Asia Minor were continuing to keep the 14th Passover, and the churches that were under the sway of Rome were doing what by this time?
They were keeping Easter, or a form of Easter, in those days.
Okay, okay. So then, with the story from there, what happened at that point?
Well, there was more and more suppressed. If you'll let me read a little bit, I don't want to bore everybody to death about it.
I may interrupt you. I can't promise I won't interrupt you. I'll try.
That's okay. But the history of this is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Fascinating history of this. And I'm going to just point out this book. I don't recommend this book. This is written by theologians for theologians. I had to go to buy it from Rome to get it. It was written by theologians from the Catholic faith. But I'd like to just read a little something here from one of the men who have written a paper about this, referring to the Quaterdecimian Passover. It played a central part in the life of the early Christian communities, and it is highly illustrative of their religious beliefs. This is the first century church he's talking about. Furthermore, celebrating it in the right way was considered by early Christians as vital to their identity. It is quite generally agreed that the oldest form of Christian Passover was the one celebrated by the Quaterdecimans. That's what they were given. It was almost a derisive name. This group, however, would end up becoming a marginal minority. On the other hand, the celebration of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which came into existence in the second century as a result of liturgical innovation, was eventually adopted by the majority of Christians and regarded by them as normative. That was a theological answer by a Catholic theologian, Mr. Ruhorst from Tilburg University, a professor there, gave an answer to your question exactly as what happened in those days.
So why is it that Catholics and many denominations take the bread and the wine all throughout the year. How did that come into being? Whereas what we're reading here, the New Testament church kept the Passover one evening of the year like Christ did. How did they get to the point where they took it all the time? Is there anything wrong with that? I mean, you would think more is better, right? If you take the symbol of Christ's sacrifice every day, every week, quarterly, wouldn't that be better? How did that happen?
Well, there are a number of scriptures that would explain how it actually came to be. I don't know. But, there's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. The prophet Jeremiah said that he did not know the way to guide his steps. And so they're using human reason. And as I like to say, tradition always trumps truth in terms of how people think. Now, in truth, truth will always trump tradition in the end. But for right now, people look to tradition. And I would say that the average person that's going to church today doesn't really have any idea any more than we do as to why their church does exactly what they do. We do understand what we do and why we do it because we're following original Christianity, the Christianity of Christ and the apostles, and they kept it on the Passover as opposed to Easter. You can't even find the name Easter in the Bible except the King James Version, where it is clearly a gloss, or it's a corruption of the word Passover only one time. And that's recognized by virtually all scholars. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to follow what the Bible actually says and why people keep it at a different time. I would have to appeal to Mr. Wakefield on that, because I don't really know why they choose once a month or every day the Catholic Mass. I guess they do it quite often.
Seems like a variety.
Maybe one fact is that our Catholic friends regard the Bible as really a third choice as far as the setting doctrine. The papal authority is first, mm-hmm. and I think I'm correct on this. And then church tradition is second, and the Bible is third. And a lot of things that are Catholic traditions that may or may not be biblical, and I don't think they would particularly argue with that. So they have the Eucharist, which is the little tab on the tongue, and our Protestant friends, and they have a different tradition in their church. But as a matter of history, and this is broadly agreed upon, especially by Catholic scholars and Catholic theologians, the first century church, as it began, and as they were taught by the apostles, they understand it. That's what they're talking about in this rather dense book that I've got here. They originally had the quarter decimal Passover on the 14th, and they took it on that time for the reasons that you stated. It pictures Christ, our Passover sacrifice for us. But then as a liturgical innovation, is his term, it changed in the second, third, and fourth centuries, and has continued on since that time. It is a tradition that they maintain.
Let me add just here so that everybody understands that when we speak of quarta deciman, quarto is four and deciman is ten. It's the 14th. So,
Latin,
yeah. So I just wanted to add that in case anybody was wondering what that word is all about.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, again, that the Passover should be kept on the 14th day of the first month in the Hebrew calendar, which every year you can find how it lines up with our Roman calendar just by doing a little bit of checking. Mm-hmm. I think you can Google it, actually, and come up with a calendar, and it'll show you what day.
Well, we'll send you one.
There you go.
Which might be a good idea, because I should say that there are a lot of people that want to calculate their own calendars as opposed to from the Jews, and they all agree that the Jews are wrong, but they don't agree amongst themselves, because you simply cannot construct a calendar without that proper background from the Jews.
Mm-hmm. But there is a way to find, if we look at the Hebrew calendar, where it lines up with our calendar today and when we should be keeping it.
The Christian Passover.
The Christian Passover. Mm-hmm. What about the Lord's Supper? How does this play into it? Some churchgoers, they talk about the Lord's Supper, and would even sometimes keep that Sunday to Sunday. How does that come into the mix?
You have to remember that the Lord's Supper biblically was a Passover. Christ said, "How I have longed with great desire to keep this Passover with you," because the Passover that they were keeping that day, that full 24-hour period, was about to be the fulfillment of the Passover, the original Passover, what they had begun. Mm-hmm. So he had longed to do it. He had longed to do it for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. He was waiting to do that all of that time. He was the God of the Old Testament, and he was about to die for his people, so that our sins could be passed over. Mm-hmm. So what they call the Lord's Supper, well, you could say that, but it is the Passover that they were taking, and he called it that.
I think that's interesting because they keep the Lord's Supper for breakfast, if you think about it. They keep it Sunday morning oftentimes. Now some keep it in the evening. But in reality, that obscures the truth, and I think that's the reason that it's called that. They don't want to call it Passover because that sounds Jewish. Mm-hmm. And in reality, that the New Testament talks about the Passover constantly, and when you change the terminology, just as in political correctness, you change the debate. And I think that that's where that goes back to.
Do you think there's an aversion? There's an aversion for someone who believes that they were a follower of Christ to keep the Passover when they think of Passover equaling Jews who killed the Messiah. Mm-hmm. So do you think there's a stigma, in a sense, attached to even the term Passover?
I just want to point out that when we keep the Christian Passover, we're not trying to be Jewish.
That's right.
When we do that. I know that there are people who are Messianics, and they blend a lot of Jewish customs into their faith. But we're simply obeying Christ, what he told us to do, and the instructions of the Apostle Paul, who told us to follow him.
So what you're saying is the Christian Passover is not the same as the Jewish Passover that many Jews keep today with all the traditions and accoutrements. We're not talking about the same thing then.
What I'm saying is that we're not trying to be Jewish when we do it. Some people think, well, you're keeping the Passover, you're trying to be Jewish. No, we're not. The first century church kept the Passover, and they were instructed to do it by Christ, instructed to do it by the apostles, and we didn't read all of the things, but the Apostle John instructed Polycarp to do these things. These are a matter of history. We haven't read all of the stuff here that we could be reading to show you all of the historical proof of this. So we are following the first century tradition that our Catholic friends call the primitive church. That's the church before it changed. And it's very, very important to understand what we're espousing here and promoting is first century Christianity.
We've just got a couple minutes left, so let's just wind it down here. The meaning of the Passover, the importance of the Passover, let's wind up with a comment on that, if we could, from each of you gentlemen, if you would. Mm-hmm. Why is the Passover, as opposed to Easter, why is the Passover important and critical as part of what we should be observing and God's plan?
Let me begin, and I'll let Mr. Weston finish up. Just a comment on what it's like to keep the Christian Passover. We do it at the beginning of the evening, because the day begins then, and it's really a very different experience. When you walk in, usually our church gatherings are joyful, happy, everybody's talking and laughing, and we're having a wonderful time together. But there's a mood that night. It's a rather somber mood. It's different from any of our other gatherings. There's a sense of the enormity of what happened that night as you go in and sit down to take the bread and the wine in the manner of the first century church. It's just a most extraordinary experience to do, because there's a different spirit that night and a different sense of what's going on, so that we realize what happens. It is truly the Christian Passover, and it's a remarkable experience to do it.
Mr. Weston, final word.
Well, I think it's important because Passover is the first of seven annual festivals. And those seven annual festivals portray the plan of God. The Passover shows us that Christ had to shed his blood for us. It's the new covenant in his blood and the bread there. So what we see is that is the beginning. We recognize that we are sinners. We recognize we need the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on our behalf. And in 1 Corinthians 5, verses 7 and 8, it says, therefore, for Christ, our Passover was sacrificed for us. Those are the words that are there. Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. And then he tells the Corinthians, the Gentile Corinthians, therefore, let us keep the feast, not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And so he's saying, because Christ died for us, we must respond to that sacrifice by repenting of our sins. And then we come to the day of Pentecost, which pictures the coming of the Holy Spirit to write God's law in our hearts and our minds. So it's the beginning of a whole plan and purpose, God's master plan, as we have there in that one booklet. These holy days portray that. And if we get off track at the very beginning, we stay off track the whole rest of the way.
Okay, thank you. I might just add, since you mentioned the holy days as a whole, we do have a booklet, The Holy Days, God's Master Plan, and along with the booklet that Mr. Weston wrote about Easter, called Easter, the Untold Story. Put it straight here so you can see it. Another piece of literature that was mentioned today. Very worthwhile to order it and read it, or you can read it online as well. And, of course, the article that Mr. Wakefield wrote called The Quarter Deciman, Are You a Quarter Deciman? That also would be a little bit of background to the discussion today. So thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate your willingness to dive into this topic that has a lot of history behind it and a lot of detail. But I hope for our audience that you all enjoy the discussion, that you learn something, were challenged by it perhaps. And if you're challenged by it and you go to the Bible and read what was referred to today, the scriptures, the story that is actually in the Bible, I think you'll benefit, and certainly follow up if you'd like further study with one of these booklets. But most importantly, we have to do what we're told to do in God's Word, and that's what we're trying to focus on here, and we're trying to learn about and teach about as well. So thanks for being with us on the TW Now program, and we look forward to seeing you next time.